From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 437, Unified Remote Access with guest Richard Hicks. Recorded Tuesday, August 25th, 2015. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. Thanks for listening to Run As Radio. With me, a returning guest, Richard Hicks, a network and information security expert and six-time Microsoft MVP. He's traveled around the world speaking to network engineers, security administrators, and IT professionals about Microsoft network and security technologies. Nearly 20 years of experience in large-scale corporate computing environments. Dude, you're getting old.
Yes, definitely showing my age, and sadly, it's my second career, so I'm even older than you might think.
Well, I know we've bumped into each other at a few of those events over the years, and of course, you've been a regular on the show for, oh my goodness, how have we been doing this too long? 6-7 years now, so.
Gosh, yeah, it's been quite a while.
It's been a while, yeah. Well, you're episode 437, so we must be doing something.
Outstanding.
Yes. What even the state of the industry continues to move. You've always had a focus on remote access and things like that. What's remote access looking like these days, especially with Server 2016 coming up?
Oh gosh. Let me tell you, it's a great time to be involved with networking in general. And, you know, my history goes back to, you know, perimeter security, edge security, things like that.
Back when that was a thing.
Yes. When we had fairly well-defined perimeters, right? Edges.
Yeah.
You had an edge security gateway because you could find the edge. You knew where it was,
yeah,
right?
Stuff like ISA server and forefront.
Exactly. Yeah. ISA, forefront, TMG. It was really easy back then. And what's funny is those products, obviously those products were deprecated by Microsoft.
Yeah.
And as an expert in those technologies, I naturally transitioned to some of the other things that were closely related. And a lot of companies were looking at deploying, you know, using those platforms to deploy them for secure remote access. And so as Microsoft kind of deprecated those, I had been doing a lot of work with direct access, which was a really interesting technology. It was one that I was exposed to because it was supported in the Forefront UAG role. And, you know, Forefront UAG is an interesting, or was an interesting animal. It's another product that's in the Microsoft graveyard now.
Right.
But it was a, you know, SSL VPN, reverse web proxy, and it supported this direct access role. And although I was not really, you know, that experienced with the SSL VPN and application proxy side of that, being strong in core networking meant that I was the one who got called in to work on those types of deployments where, because it was, you know, it was IPv6, IPsec.
Yeah.
And a lot of things like that. And so.
Well, you know, and we did a show with you on direct access back in 2012. I mean, that's 3 years ago.
Correct.
And so it was hard. Those early, that first version of direct access, that was not an easy product to put together. Didn't you need like two contiguous public IPs to make it work?
The first iteration of direct access actually required IPv6 on the intranet in order to take advantage of it. So that was pretty much a showstopper for almost everybody.
Yeah.
UAG made it better by including translation technologies to eliminate the IPv6 requirement, but it introduced its own set of complexities because UAG was such an unwieldy beast. Windows Server 2012, 2012 R2 came out. Then we now have that role just as a part of the unified remote access role in Windows. Much more efficient, much more streamlined, a lot easier to implement, troubleshoot, and support.
Yep.
Still a lot of moving parts.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of infrastructure components that are made up that are part of the solution, but fundamentally it wasn't terribly difficult. It was a bit like herding cats sometimes, and especially in large enterprises, but once you had all the prerequisites, you know, lined up, actually installing it and configuring it was not terrible.
Yeah, you just ran it in a VM. Like it just became another weird VM in your infrastructure,
correct.
Like your DHCP and DNS services and stuff. It's just one of these other things you need to run. Leave it on its own. The
exactly.
One guy who knows how to set it up sets it up. It's mapped into your AD. You're fine.
Mm-hmm. And you're absolutely right. So direct access really is a set it and forget it kind of solution.
It
sometimes is quite challenging to get working.
Getting it to good is hard, but
once
good.
It is there, it usually you just walk away from it and it just runs. And as long as you don't let certificates expire, most of the times, you know, it will continue to run. And you're absolutely right. It will run effortlessly for quite some time. And, you know, I still to this day, spend the majority of my time deploying direct access, surprisingly. It is a technology for which there are very few real experts out there, and it is a technology with which many large organizations are absolutely enamored with, because it provides them not only a much easier way to provide secure remote access for their users, it does it in a more secure fashion, and since it's bidirectional, it allows them and provides them much more visibility into the and really manageability of their remote field based assets, their Windows join laptops and things like that.
Well, and no user likes VPN. They all hate it because they're all horrible, right?
That's absolutely true.
It's a tool that you run that interrupts you when you're trying to work. That's all it is.
You're absolutely right. And direct access is not like that at all.
Because it
operates at the machine level. So when you open up your laptop and you log in, it's already on connected, and you're connected to the CorpNet. And if you need to access something, for example, and in my demos, I show this. I have a shortcut to a Word document on my desktop. It resides on my CorpNet file server. And if I just double click on that, whenever I want, it's just there. The user doesn't know whether I'm connected, not connected. They don't really care. They just get to this resource. As long as they have an internet connection, which is what 99.9% of the time these days, right? It just works, and it's fantastic.
I appreciate that it fails quietly and it functions quietly.
Absolutely. Right? You're absolutely right
just
there.
Just get rid of those interruptions.
As awesome as the user experience is, often that's not the primary driver for adopting the technology. Most of the time, it's the security compliance managers.
Yes.
It's the systems management folks that say, I have 5,000 laptops in my organization, and when they leave the building, I don't know what they're doing. I don't know what state they're in until they come back, and then I find out, oh, somebody disabled the firewall or installed some unmanaged software.
Right.
And now
they found their way to get the admin account to the machine, and they've been doing stuff.
Yep, absolutely. Or worse than that is, like, you know, I have 5,000 laptops. At any point in time, a couple of thousand of them are outside of my corporate boundaries. They're outside of the network, and a zero-day vulnerability comes up. And I need to run a PowerShell script against everybody to do something, right?
Right.
Make a registry change, or, you know, there's a lot of times there's workarounds or vulnerability mitigations that you can implement quickly using, you know, PowerShell, WMI, what have you. And of course, you do that to all your bolted in CorpNet clients and servers. That's easy.
No problem.
What do you do about all those field devices that are exposed and vulnerable until they come back to the LAN? Well, in some organizations that I talk to, they either come back in once or twice every year.
Yeah.
Sometimes never. I was working with a customer just last week, 600 or 700 clients that once they provision them, never come back because their corporate office had 5 people in it. Everybody else was field based.
Yep.
Because they did something with construction. So all entirely field based. So in those scenarios, how do you do that? How do you provide that management and connectivity? Direct access is awesome.
Yeah. It just takes care of that particular set of issues. So, you know, love the remote access. All that stuff works really well. We're still working at 2012 R2, right? Like, that's the production product. And I think we pretty much had that conversation the most part. Did much happen between 2012 and R2 in terms of direct access improvements? Because it is a young product.
Absolutely. So 2012 R2, the difference in 2012 and 2012 R2 was largely just maintenance. It was mostly under the hood. No new features and functionality. And by the way, even in Server 2016, there's no new features and functionality.
No kidding.
Which is most interesting because you would think, well, you know, why is Microsoft not investing in this technology?
Yeah.
What is that? And I get this question a lot, and the answer comes from our friends at Microsoft have become much more inclusive these days. So you remember back in the day when, you know, Microsoft really just cared about Windows, and they cared about domain join Windows.
Yep.
And if it wasn't domain join Windows, they really
didn't
care.
It's not that important. Yeah.
You remember the days before, you know, Intune and things like that, where they just had no, if you couldn't manage it with group policy, they were out.
Yeah.
They really
not much they could
less.
Do for you.
And what they're seeing now is that direct access is fantastic for enterprise clients who have a large population of domain join Windows devices they need to provide secure remote access for and management for.
And I've seen plenty of small organizations that are running a domain, but it is commitment to run a domain. There's a whole host of product that only makes sense if you have AD.
Yes, absolutely. And then specifically for the direct access workload, it requires the enterprise SKU. So that,
right.
that really throws some people off there.
Yeah,
but yeah, right. What happens if I go, what if I go to the Microsoft store and buy 5 Surface Pros and yeah. I need remote access? Direct access is not going to work for you, right? So what we're seeing now, and of course, non-Microsoft devices, of course, don't support direct access no. either. So Microsoft has been very quietly kind of shifting their focus with remote access, and they're really now starting to consider client-based VPN as the solution of the future. And by the future, I mean certainly beyond 2016, because direct access is still in 2016. And given the way that corporations move, you know, 2016 is going to be brand new. And by the time a lot of these large enterprises start to adopt direct access, Microsoft will probably have moved on to the next thing. But, you know, ultimately, you know, the way with how slow some of these large enterprises move, you know, they're still going to be lagging behind this, you know, in 3 to 5 years plus or so. But
I mean, it's been tough to be responsible for remote connectivity in a Microsoft shop.
Mm-hmm.
They've changed their minds a bunch of times. Remember network access protection?
You yes, know,
remember
absolutely.
UAG?
Gone.
Like this, we've,
gone.
In the span of, and I'm looking at your history with me, my friend, from 2009 till today, 6 years, 4 shows, 4 distinctly different ways of securing the perimeter and providing remote access.
You know, it's funny. I kind of gravitate towards these niche technologies,
it's not niche. It's incredibly important, but they've changed their minds a lot.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. And it's interesting, but the investments they're making in client-based VPN are more inclusive. So they do support, you know, non-Microsoft platforms, non-domain joined platforms. And by the way, beginning in Windows 8, Microsoft very quietly introduced a feature called Auto Trigger VPN. And Auto Trigger VPN is the first inkling that they liked the direct access experience, but they needed something more broad-based. And so what they have built, at least into their platforms, into Windows platforms, is Auto Trigger VPN, which has the ability to give you a direct access-like user experience. Now, what that means is that I assign a VPN connection to an executable, an application ID. So if it's a modern app, there's an application ID from the store, I mean. And if it's just a traditional app, Win32, it has the application ID is essentially the path to the executable, the full path. And when that application launches, the VPN launches.
Right.
So the idea here is, you know, when you need to launch an on-premises application, you just double click on it. The VPN just launches and logs you in because your credentials are saved. And it gives you, at least from a user's perspective, a VPN-like experience. It doesn't provide the manageability that large organizations provide, but it certainly is kind of this step in kind of saying, you know, hey, you know, we're trying to be more inclusive. We're going to support non-domain joined devices, at least now, and then professional editions, right? So, you know, direct access was enterprise only. So does support some of those things. Obviously, third-party clients are not going to have Auto Trigger VPN built into them, but there may be, you know, third-party components that are available that will do that in the future. And you'll see something where you get this direct access-like user experience and, you know, you get some of that, at least some of the end user perspective of that.
Yeah, no kidding. You know, this we want that stuff to just behave like, you know.
Absolutely.
What direct access brought to us was I don't have to think about my VPN anymore.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, that ruined it. Like, that's the bar now, kids. If it can't do that, nothing else matters.
You're absolutely right. And I'll be honest with you. So one of the reasons that I believe Microsoft is looking to move away from direct access in the future, I don't want to alarm our listeners and think that it's going away tomorrow or next week or even next month. One of the things is that they're looking towards the future in that they've built a solution that is really powerful, but and really compelling. But at the same time, it's a bit of a support challenge for them.
Sure.
There's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of technologies that it leverages that a lot of IT pros don't have experience today with. IPsec and IPv6 being prominently the two prominent ones. You know, you say people to IPv6 to people, and sometimes they freak out. And certainly they freak out when they see an IPv6 address, right?
Sure.
So as soon as something happens or goes wrong, they're on the phone with Microsoft.
Right.
And so And also PKI and certificates. There's a lot of people that just don't have the troubleshooting skills with that. I think what they're trying to do is take a step back and say, you know, we like the experience, but let's change the plumbing a little bit. And again, it has the ability to provide at least that type of experience from the end user perspective, but we lose some of that management capability as well that large enterprises like. And again, it does require either manual configuration using PowerShell, or ideally you would use something like, Intune or an MDM platform to be able to do that. And we still have many large organizations, you know, Fortune 100, Fortune 500, that are heavily invested in on-premises and Active Directory, and they use group policy to manage everything. So they're going to be they're still going to be using direct access for many, many years to come, I'm certain.
Absolutely. Give me 1 second to pay the bills here, because Run As Radio is brought to you by ScriptRock, the makers of Guardrail and the fighters of Configuration Drift. Configuration Drift happens in every environment from 5 nodes to 5,000. Guardrail will find and scan the configs of every node in your environment, no matter the platform, and alert you to changes happening across machines. Give it a try for 3 months free with the coupon code RUNASRADIO, all one word, at scriptrock.com/RUNASRADIO. All right, so walk me through this modern direct access secure remote access approach. What's the role of Intune here? Like, obviously, I need an Intune subscription per user?
Correct. Okay. And so ideally what would happen is you would use Intune to configure your endpoints, in this case,
right,
to deploy the VPN connection properties, right? So the VPN server address, the protocols that you support, the authentication methods that you're planning to support, and so forth. And then you would assign applications to VPN profiles. So, for example, if I want to make sure that a certain executable, foo.exe is always launches VPN,
right,
I would use Intune to do that. And again, if you're going to use a modern app, because again, you can do this with store apps,
mm-hmm,
there's an application ID, looks like almost like a GUID that comes down with that.
Right.
You gather that information and you can assign that. And so then when the user, when they're on even a Surface Pro, when they're on a Windows home machine, what have you, it doesn't really matter anymore. It doesn't have to be domain joined. Doesn't have to be a specific SKU like enterprise SKU. When they get this, when they're managed via Intune,
right,
and when they launch this application, this particular profile or VPN profile will be launched, connected, and go. And so some of the challenges that we faced in Windows 8 were that, one, it doesn't work for domain joined systems.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of put, some of these enterprises who said, hey, we have domain join systems, but, we don't have direct access and we'd still like to leverage this technology. Well, you actually can't be domain joined in Windows 8 to take advantage of that.
Huh.
They fixed that in Windows 10. In Windows 10, it will work with domain and non-domain join systems. So
right,
that's nice. Also, from a direct access perspective, it allows us to address a shortcoming in direct access where direct access, of course, is an IPv6 only solution. It uses IPv6 exclusively from the client to the server or to the gateway.
Right.
And so there are applications that don't work if they make calls directly to IPv4 addresses. That just doesn't work over direct access. Now we can take this application, if it does make calls to IPv4 addresses, and we can use Auto Trigger actually to basically augment and enhance the direct access experience for those applications.
So you're basically wrapping its network calling abilities in a tunneler through IPv4 or through IPv6 to allow the IPv4 calls to work.
Well, fundamentally, what we would actually be doing is launching a separate VPN connection. So
right,
we have the direct access connection. We have an application that wants to talk to an IPv4 address on the corporate network directly, which doesn't work over DA. In this case, we'll light up the VPN tunnel when we launch the app. The user doesn't even have to know it's not compatible with DA. And then at that point, the tunnel comes up and it's just a standard VPN tunnel to the VPN server,
mm-hmm,
which could be a Windows server. It could be a Cisco, Checkpoint, Juniper, SonicWall, whatever you want. And then it gets an IPv4 address and it can talk.
Wow.
And then when that connection's done, it just drops, the DA tunnels come back up and everything works. So from that perspective, it actually works quite well.
Does every app that's configured this way create a separate tunnel on demand?
So that's a good question.
Mm-hmm.
So in Windows 8, yes, but in Windows 8, the rub was that when application A launched and lit up the VPN, all other applications could access the corp net.
Oh, I see.
So basically, this is the first one that launched it, but everybody else could use it too.
Now it stood it up. It's there. Everybody can use it.
And anybody else could use it too, right? Well, that may or may not be a good idea. In Windows 10 now, Microsoft now has something called per app VPN. And what this means is that you can actually assign a VPN profile to a specific application, and only that application can access it. So if I launch application A, it has access to the CorpNet. If I launch application B, and it doesn't, you know, it doesn't have a VPN profile assigned to it, then it will not be able to access the CorpNet. So per app VPN tightens up that security and really makes it a little bit more manageable in terms of security in that respect.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, that's the big one, is being able to, now you could actually have, you know, problem number two. I have three different VPN sites, right? I'm a really distributed company and I, you know, multiple entities. Can I actually manage multiple different types of VPN connections, app for app, simultaneously?
You certainly could. You know, certainly, that's going to present a management challenge. But ultimately, using Intune or any other third-party MDM solution, you certainly can do that.
Yeah. Well, I also think about the licensing side of all of this. Like, you know, people who get in bed with Cisco or Juniper, you know, you make a commitment to a VPN solution, and it's a commitment. Mm-hmm. And often it's a per seat commitment as well. So you're kind of careful with those licenses because it costs you.
Exactly.
And they have a specific client. Am I able to work with this, with their VPN systems?
So excellent point. So if you're using a third party VPN, the chances are they have a couple of different licenses. So first of all, the license would be per, you know, concurrent user on the hardware device, right? So if I have a Cisco VPN concentrator or an ASA or something like that, it is going to be licensed to support X number of VPN users, right? And so I have to pay for those licenses.
Yes.
Now, I have to pay for those licenses regardless of who's actually going to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there may be other devices that I'm not, you know, aware of or don't have experience with that do some sort of concurrent licensing. I know some SSL VPNs used to do that back in the day. So you could buy 5,000 licenses and user number 5,001 can't connect.
Right.
So I may have 20,000 employees, but if I only expect 4,000 or 5,000 to connect, I can use concurrent licensing to do that.
Yeah.
I think the beauty of a Windows solution, and it's funny because I'll have this conversation with some customers, and that'll be like one of the first questions is, why would I ever even consider using a Windows server for my remote access server? Why would I not just use my networking gear? Like, because that's what I've always done.
Yeah.
And it comes up to licensing, and I tell them, well, you know, if you have Windows Server licenses, or, you know, those licenses are certainly less expensive than physical hardware devices,
sure,
right? You can stand up a remote access server using Windows Server 2012 or 2012 R2 and really save a significant amount of money on your licensing costs.
Yeah.
And not only that, if you think about it, you also get to use your existing Windows management systems administration skills to manage the platform too. Still have to understand networking, but everybody knows how to use, well, should know how to use PowerShell by now.
Right.
The GUI is obviously intuitive enough, right?
Yeah.
And so you just use those same, you know, those same skill sets that we use to manage our Windows environment to manage our remote access platform. I always tell people, you know, MCSEs are a lot less expensive than CCIEs.
Yeah.
So, you know, you don't have to pay for that proprietary skill set to manage that specific solution. And, you know, when you look at some of the technologies that Microsoft includes in their remote access platforms, like Direct Access, like some of the AutoTrigger VPN components, those are not available in other or in many other solutions. So there are some compelling reasons to consider that as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then, you know, in terms of buying hardware to scale up, for example, if I were to deploy this with a hardware device, you know, and I need additional capacity, I have to buy another physical hardware device or I have to license additional virtual machines or something like that. With Windows, I just spin up additional VMs.
Yeah.
And the beauty is if I'm running this on a Hyper-V host that's running data center, right, what I get unlimited guests, right?
Yeah.
I could scale this out. I can scale it out much more effectively. And the final reason, one of the reasons I like is the security updates. The Windows platform has the most mature, the most secure, and the most well understood, and the most robust.
Yeah. Most challenged
mechanism.
Too.
It has its own challenges, but let me tell you, you know, I have some Cisco devices here on my desk. I have absolutely no idea if there's any updates for them. They're not going to tell me, right?
Yeah.
I'm not going to get an alert next time I log in that says, hey, updates are available. I'm never going to get that, right?
No.
There are some pretty serious reasons to consider it. Now, maybe not at the enterprise level. They have their own unique set of requirements, but I'll be honest with you, at small and mid-sized level, it's a pretty compelling solution.
Yeah, no kidding. It's in some ways really, really simpler. I love having stuff as VMs and being able to cluster it and so forth. It's just configuration information then.
Snapshots,
yeah,
live migrations, all the goodness that comes along with running on a virtual platform. Yeah. Absolutely. I love the fact that, you know, anytime I want to make a change, I make a snapshot, I make my change. I'm not afraid of it going sideways or completely upside down.
Because rollback is trivial now.
I have that snapshot in my back pocket, right?
Yeah. I'll just go back. I don't know what you did. Is it good? Well, let's go back and I'll read some more, right?
Get VM foo, restore VM snapshot.
Yeah. Bam. There we go. But you know, I'm treating my updates like that all the time these days. So it's like, no, I want to stay patched all the time, but I'll take a snapshot first. And you know where it'll save your bacon? Exchange. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
There are few pieces of software in this world I fear, but Exchange is one of them.
Yes, yes, yes. And I'm always surprised at those folks that are still running Exchange on premises. Yeah. I've bailed out on that years ago.
But I'm that guy.
You know, and I understand that there are some circumstances in which you would have to or would want to do that. But boy, that is one of the first workloads you should look at the cloud for.
Yeah.
Just get that out of here. That is a beast.
I like being able to look an Exchange guy in the eye and say, I feel your pain, because there's no other justification for it, really. But at some point, and I'll make the 2016 migration just to say I was there for the last one.
So you did. Yeah. You expect that to be the last one, though.
I really start to feel it's getting silly. Right. And my 2013 instance works like a hot damn. I'm very happy with it, and I do understand it, but it's still mail. When it pouts, everybody's upset.
Yep. Absolutely.
So it is an interesting challenge. And who knows what I'm missing, you know, that I'd be better off in the cloud for. But it's I built my own little cloud in the house, a little clustered set of servers with failover, power backup, redundant internet connections. So this is all literally residual of the original .com boom.
Sure,
I built this lab in the first place, and it
awesome.
But there is now that it's architected like the cloud is architected with everything virtualized. Now you look at it and go, why am I still building this?
And you know, it's funny because this is a good segue into one of the other topics that I wanted to talk about, which was cloud. It's funny because you mentioned earlier that all these technologies that I've spoken to you about over the years seem to go by the wayside.
Yeah.
And I honestly don't expect that that's not going to happen with this too, because, the cloud is coming, right? The cloud is the way of the future.
Yeah.
And fundamentally, this is an on-premises solution, right? Direct access.
Yes.
Remote access, things like that. I get those questions all the time. What are you looking forward to the future? Well, I'll tell you what, there's all kinds of good networking in the cloud. Mm-hmm. And what we're seeing also in Server 2016 is again, this iterative process that Microsoft uses to build really cool stuff in the cloud and then put it in the operating system and let people use it on premises.
Push it back down.
Microsoft came to that realization a number of years ago that they could make the most awesome, perfectly secure cloud in the world. There's still going to be people that can't or won't take advantage of it. And so they want to make sure that they either enable a hybrid cloud experience, right? So some workloads in the cloud, some workloads on premises. And, some of those customers who just say, hey, we're big enough, we're going to do it ourselves,
sure,
but we want to take advantage of that model. The cloud computing model is clearly the way to go. I come from, and maybe you do too, it sounds like it. I come from the old school way of, back in the day when an application meant if it was a three-tier application, there were at least three servers, right?
Yes.
The web server was a server. The database was a server.
Machines,
right?
Each one of them. They had glowy lights.
It's just like, boy, I look back and I think, gosh, that was so stupid, but nearly obviously didn't have the technology.
Yeah.
Now it's just a service. I just need some resources. Give it to me. And the beauty of being, of course, elastic resources, right? So I need lots more for an hour or so, spin that up and do that. And so when I look at a lot of the technologies that I work with, obviously things like direct access are not supported in the cloud. There are remote access capabilities in the cloud, but I think they're still very nascent. I think that those will get better. If you have any experience with Azure point-to-site VPN, their client-based remote access VPN, that is awful. I hope that gets better in the future. But I think they're just so focused on looking at other things. But I've had customers actually reach out to me and engage me to build remote access solutions in the cloud, and unfortunately, the Windows Server 2012 R2 RAS role is actually not supported in, as an Azure workload. So you can get some things to work for a period of time, but due to some of the mechanics of the way the cloud works, if you deprovision a server or if Microsoft moves your server off to another host, you get basically what appears to the guest operating system as some new hardware, and it flips out. And so things break. So, but it's interesting to see some of those capabilities come back on premise. I don't know if you're familiar with some of the new features, in Server 2016 Technical Preview 3 that was just announced recently.
Haven't looked.
Oh my gosh. There was, I must have spent a day and a half just reading about all
wow.
the new stuff. Haven't had a chance to play with any of it yet, unfortunately, but, a lot of the things that you saw, that you see in Azure, like the software load balancer, like a lot of the virtual appliance support, those are actually coming to on-prem. Those are coming to Server 2016.
Yeah.
They've made enhancements to the what they call the Windows Server Gateway, which is basically that is a component that you would use in a virtual environment to bridge the physical and virtual networks.
Yep.
And things like that. There's a new network controller, and I haven't spent a lot of time on this one yet, but this network controller looks pretty compelling. It allows you to it basically is like a central point of management and automation for both your physical and virtual network. It's operated and managed. You can do it with PowerShell, but I think the idea is to do it with VMM.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea here with the network controller is that it allows you to manage both physical and virtual all in one.
Well, it becomes transparent.
Becomes transparent. It has to, right? Because, you know, the network is so fluid. SDN started that, right? We had overlay networks, and
yes.
that was important. But the ability to be able to handle hyperscale automation. And not only the network controller has some really cool features built into it that do proactive monitoring of the network. So it actually monitors throughput and latency proactively. And so it can actually alert administrators to devices or endpoints in a network that perhaps are introducing latency.
Yeah.
You know, this switch in this fabric is slow, right? And you can get that information. I'm assuming ostensibly that you would then be able to make programmatic decisions to route traffic around
yeah,
that.
I think it's just the next tier of networking as a whole is being smarter about all that stuff.
Sure. Yeah. See,
the way that I'm thinking these days is all cloud is hybrid because you mm-hmm. always have a machine outside of that data center. It's at least your yes. client, if nothing else. So
absolutely, yeah.
that
yeah.
never goes away. And our ability to interact like that, like you could see inevitably, you'll authenticate to a cloud entity that has a relationship with your on-prem stuff in terms of your identity.
Yes.
And then it's
yep.
a decision of, you know, where are these resources? Are they up in the secured part of the cloud? Are they on the on-prem mm-hmm. machine? Like, what's the difference? It's all the same.
Yep. Definitely yeah. interesting times, for sure.
For sure. Richard, always fun to talk to you. Thanks so much for coming back.
My pleasure. Thanks, Rich.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.